sex and happiness.
Both enrich our lives, change our lives in ways that make life worth living. Yet it's surprising how few people can honestly say that they enjoy regular and fulfilling sex or describe themselves and their lives as happy. Host Lori Handlers helps you to explore, learn about, and most importantly, have great sex. And in the process, she helps you to experience real intimacy and happiness.
Sex and happiness.
You'll laugh a little, learn a little, and we hope put a smile on your face and a smile in your life. Now here's Lori.
Hi, everybody. This is Lori Handlers, and you're listening to Sex and Happiness, a show about sex and happiness. And today we're going to talk about possibly some sex and unhappiness. It won't really add up to all that, but we're going to talk about how some people are trying to censor other people's freedom of sex and happiness, and really the freedom of sexy speech. There is a lot of censorship these days about that. My guest today is Lori Ann Lothian, and she's a contributing editor at the Good Men Project magazine. She's the publisher of Rebel Sex, an online sex educational magazine staffed by pleasure gurus, love style experts, and sexy daring writers. And she also is a Huffington Post blogger, a columnist at Elephant Journal, but we're going to hear about that, and also writes with Curiosity and Abandon about sexuality, libido, and relationships. She's the author of the surprise hit article, Five Unrealistic Sex Moves Men Learn from Watching Porn, which has been wildly shared on Facebook and Twitter. I said wildly, but I think that's probably true, wildly rather than widely. Anyway, Lori Ann, it is my pleasure to have you on Sex and Happiness.
Thank you, Lori.
So Listen, before we go to all the rest of the stuff, you know, the projects, et cetera, like you were so involved in the core or the hub of people writing about orgasm, libido, sexuality, relationships, and you've had some interesting things happen to you as a result, just kind of when you and I first met.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us what's going on and why this is so important to look at, and then we'll come back to all these projects.
Yeah, that's a good way to start, is in the beginning.
Yeah.
So, you know, funny enough, I am a menopausal woman, so I didn't mean to end up writing so much about sexuality or also promoting the work of writers who are sex educators. But I was working as an editor at Elephant Journal, and I was writing and editing for them in the Love and Relationships section of the magazine, and I began to discover so many huge writing talents who had a lot to say about sexuality in ways that were vulnerable, honest, extraordinarily insightful, healthy, innocent, sharing. And all of that simply delighted me, and I became quite the advocate for that kind of material and began to promote those writers as much as I could and find forums for their work. One of my favorite writers who I know you have interviewed is Candace Holdorf, and she's extremely bold and very brave in her writing, and she moves a lot of people. Her writing on sexuality is often really well received. So that's the background of how I actually became so interested in this material and in my own life as well. I've always been sexually venturesome and a bit of a sexual free spirit. So I guess my personality was a match for that. Supporting that material on the internet, finding venues for those writers. Eventually, I got a little bit frustrated at Elephant Journal, and it was not really a matter of censorship, but a matter of fit. It's a Buddhist yogic magazine, and some of the readership became a little bit disgruntled about the orgasmic content. So I decided rather than, and it was becoming an issue, I was kind of finding I had to tone down sex content in favor of, say, relationship content. I thought, well, you know, why don't I just start my own magazine where we all talk about sex? And everyone who comes to the storyline knows we're here to talk about sex. And that is Rebel Sex, the website. The actual the magazine isn't launched at this point. And that's where we get to the crux of the story. Because I had used social media really adeptly with Elephant Journal and even now at the Good Men Project, I really learned how to maximize Twitter and Facebook and Pinterest and Google Plus. And one of the major forums for promoting material and writers is, in fact, Facebook. So I invested a lot of time and some degree of my own money in creating a Facebook platform, actually called a Facebook page, that was actually named Rebel Sex as a launch buzz pad for the magazine. And that's where we come to the freedom of sexy speech issue.
So they closed you down or something? They
closed me down. They unpublished me and then they deleted me. And I don't want to sound like a victim here because I wasn't the only one. There was a raid about 2.5-3 weeks ago on adult content pages. And if you had the word sexy or orgasm, or you know, you perhaps had a violation for something that they perceived as nudity, you were on like kind of a hit list to be unpublished. So I'd say thousands of pages were unpublished on one day. I believe it was Saturday, June the 8th. And the Facebook algorithm basically did this. It wasn't like there's one person there clicking away. And what happened was they have an appeals process, which basically means, hey, hit this little button, say, I think you made a mistake when you unpublished me. There's no recourse to present evidence. There's no argument. There's no real appeal. It's all behind closed doors, a very black box process.
Wow.
Yeah, and basically I am in contact with about 30 other page owners who had sexual content, not the kind I had. Mine was educational. Theirs was kind of more playful, you know, borderline nudity, BDSM, several BDSM pages went down, and almost none of us got reestablished. So I was given a notice that I was unpublished, and then about 10 days later I was deleted permanently from cyberspace. The entire 20,000 fan page, 100,000 to 200,000 weekly reach, 50% male, 50% female, globally big. I had people in Europe, I had people in North and South America. The whole thing just evaporated in one day. Gone.
Wow. And that's like taking your business down. That's like somebody coming in and saying, we're shutting the doors on your business. You didn't pay the rent.
Exactly. Unfortunately, that it is their site and they can do what they want. And because there's no formal business contract in which you're actually agreeing to whatever the terms are, it really is rather vague anyway what the terms are for, say, community standards. That's a whole issue, right? Freedom of sexy speech. I would say, okay, there's a community standard that says no pornography and another standard that says no nudity. There is absolutely no definition on the website as to what constitutes nudity and what constitutes pornography. And so, I mean, a lot of users end up getting caught up in that very vague terms of service and violating it by mistake. So I have a really good example of that because, it's really tricky to look at this idea of what goes on a social media site like Facebook and not want to villainize Facebook, but rather, because it's easy to do that, like Puritan Facebook. You know, rotten, evil Facebook. I want to take the conversation up a level because what I actually see happening is I see it as more of a cultural node. Facebook's shutdown of adult content wasn't driven by any moral standard or Puritan standard as much as it was driven by a desire to make sure that they did not lose any more of their advertisers. And about a week before this new shutdown plan for adult content, Facebook had lost several advertisers who became aware of, say, you know, let's use an example, like an ad for Toyota cars appearing next to a tits and ass page, right? Like a page that has, you know, big-breasted women and little butts up in the air with their, you know, their micro shorts or their G-strings. So that was happening. There was a lot of that kind of material. Maxim and Playboy as well still are on Facebook. And at the time, before this new change of policy, Facebook ran ads next to those content pages, right? Next to those pages. That Facebook is no longer running ads next to any of those pages, like Maxim and Playboy, but also it has completely made sure that there is a dearth of those pages. You can't shut down Playboy. It has 1.2 million fans, or Maxim, probably 800,000 fans. But they can shut down all of the little pages, which is what they've done.
Wow. So it's actually a discrimination within a discrimination. I mean, when I hear you speaking about this, it's like, okay, they can't shut them down. But, well, they could shut them down. I mean, why would they just pick the small ones? And I guess because they can. But,
I don't know. I think if you talk to a Facebook spokesperson, and I have been in contact with two of them for the last 2 months over several different issues as an editor. And that's another unfortunate part of the story, is that there's a bit of an elitism there. If you're in the media, you'll have those contact information emails, but if you're just the average person, there's no way to reach a real person at Facebook. But when I talk to some of the policy spokespeople by email, which is how they correspond, they won't get on the phone with you. I think what they'll say is that, oh, well, your page was flagged for violations, and therefore your page is now no longer allowed to be here. And I am sure that Maxim and Playboy probably have had a couple of violations in which someone has reported an image as, say, nudity, and Facebook may have reviewed it and may have removed the image. But there's really a huge double standard going on right now. So one of the articles I wrote was Facebook cracks down on adult content, spares Playboy. It was a huge hit, Lori. It went to like 4,000 shares in 12 hours, 24 hours, and yet Facebook was blocking the content from their Facebook news feeds. So I could watch in real time, for instance, someone, a friend of mine posted and it disappeared from her page. I was watching her do it. I was watching people post it to their timeline and then friends reporting it wasn't visible in the news feeds. So that's the degree to which Facebook will actively engage to suppress information about them that shows that they are, in fact, hugely discriminatory and censoring of content, one, that's negative about them, which maybe I say they can do, it's their business site, but two, the article itself, the reason I was bringing it up, one with the spares Playboy, is that a few of the pages that were deleted or unpublished during the time I wrote the article were in content violation for material that was identical to what was currently displayed at Maxim and Playboy. So an example I posted in the article would be a picture of a woman with her butt in the air and a G-string on, turned sideways. It's just, you know, it's a G-string. And then you'd have the same image at a smaller page with a violation, a 30-day ban on the administrator, and eventually an unpublishing of the page in the crackdown. So, you know, of course they could unpublish Playboy and Maxim, but the bad publicity would probably not be worth it.
Right. I didn't realize, even though I'm on some of the sites where people are talking about all this, it just, when talking to you, it really drives it home. You know, wow. You know, it's amazing. And yet, how many advertisers did they lose? I really want to know that.
Well, I do know that they lost a huge chunk of advertisers in the month before that. And that was probably a very justified move in the direction of something proper, or I concur, when Women Action in the Media, a coalition of feminists, exposed Facebook for allowing pages that were discriminatory and hateful towards women, you know, like with posters like rape the bitch or whatever. And of course, then the advertisers going, oh my God, you're advertising my car product or my, you know, my spa product next to this content. So I think what happened is it may have cascaded a wave, right, of Facebook really looking at what goes on in its content, but also of advertisers looking at what their material was appearing next to. So I think a lot of people, especially the BDSM pages, they were hit very hard. Almost no BDSM content pages, I think, didn't get shut down. And there was a huge upcry against Women Action in the Media, because most of the BDSM pages were pretty sure it was this feminist coalition that had targeted them. But I really don't think that's what it was. The feminist coalition knows very well that BDSM is not violence to women, that it's a lifestyle choice. It's a consensual sexual lifestyle choice. And in fact, the sub is often a man just as many times as it could be a woman. So,
exactly.
But the fact that, you know, there was such a clear-cut sort of raid and a deep gouge into the BDSM community on Facebook is really disheartening. To me, it's disheartening because BDSM is really a powerful consensual lifestyle and sex style choice that has nothing to do with, violence or we're not even talking about that the pages had sexually explicit content or nudity. We're just simply talking that it displayed like pictures of cuffs and collars and that kind of stuff. So I'm a little disheartened, and I'm a little afraid to like spend too much time in that mode of talking about what's wrong with Facebook. There are other social media sites like Pinterest is less strict. Tumblr is completely open to adult content. And I think the greater message here is simply about the cultural norm and the know mm-hmm. that we have about if it's pornography, we know where to put it. It's on a double X, triple X porn site. You got to be 18 to get in there. And, you know, advertisers like with Google AdSense don't go there. Or you don't have sexual content at all. You may have reproductive organ sex ed, but you won't have sexually intelligent conversations about what is the full range of consensual sexual expression.
Exactly. Well, we're going to need to take a little break here, but I think this is so important for people to hear about this. When we come back, we'll talk about what people have learned by being on Facebook, what they've learned by reading Elephant Journal and so on, and then what is this suppression will be influencing people and taking away from the richness of their life experience. So if you just tuned in, you're listening to Sex and Happiness. I'm talking with Laurie Ann Lothian, who got clobbered on Facebook, even though she's not being a victim about it, for investing a lot of money and having a page, developing a page called Rebel Sex. We're talking about the freedom of sexy speech. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back. My question for people right now is, if you're a woman who could use a little zest and zing in your arousal response, or maybe you know women or a woman who could use this, because many women say that their feelings of desire, arousal, and sexual satisfaction don't happen as naturally or as often as they'd like. So I want to tell you about Zestra, because Zestra was developed to meet this much-needed option for women. Zestra's safe and a patented blend of botanical oils and extracts, and it's created to help women have increased sexual sensations. Zestra comes in convenient single-dose personal packets. Each packet keeps the essential arousal oils and extracts free, fresh, and safe from light. And with application of Zestra, it starts to work within 3 to 5 minutes. And at about 10 minutes, there's something called the Zestra Rush. And that can last up to about 45 minutes. The great news is that Zestra can be used as frequently as you like during each sexual experience. Now, I'm somebody who believes that all women deserve sexual satisfaction. That's why I do this show, in case you hadn't noticed. So I believe that men and women deserve sexual satisfaction. So if you're a woman who isn't getting that kind of arousal response that you want, please call 877-426-8047. That's 877-426-8047. And please remember to say you heard about Zestra from Laurie Handlers on the Sex and Happiness Show.
Wow, sex magic. Laurie Handler's sex magic.
The workshop is really, really amazing. And we were able to create and generate this intense energy in a space of safety and love and abundance. And the magic really happens when she is free to let go.
That shouldn't be called sex magic. It should be called sex
miracle. That she's the strongest facilitator that I've had the experience with, and there was not a moment when I didn't feel safe or not supported. She was with us individually and as a group the entire time, so that allowed me to go deeper than I've ever had.
Where my lover got to come and orgasm over and over and over again. She was loud as anything, and she was like a wild animal, untamed and free.
It just will bring you into such deeper places within yourself so that you're able to share with your partner.
Sex magic. I'm still feeling it. It was beautiful.
The next Sex Magic course is August 2nd to 4th in Phoenix, Arizona. What an amazing course, if I say so myself. But of course, you've just heard the testimonies. For more information, go to butterflyworkshops.com. Click on workshops and find out more about sex magic. It's magical. We're back with Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers, and I'm interviewing Laurie Ann Lothian. And basically, we're talking about how business-wise, it seemed like Facebook needed to put some restraints on certain ads showing up next to certain content, but they seem to have gone perhaps off the deep end. And you were just talking about some of the other sites that are more liberal and or lenient, and I want to let you know that I've had content removed from Pinterest, so you know, and it was artwork. It wasn't even photography or, you know, it was like would be considered fine art.
You know, that's such a good point, you know, that it's actually very germane as well, because I think what's going on at Pinterest, I found Pinterest a little less policing than Facebook, but I've seen it at Facebook as well. And during my time at Elephant Journal, working as an admin or a content page manager on their Facebook page, and that Facebook page has 120,000 fans organically grown. Only a month ago or so, we posted an image that was an Art Deco painting from 1932 of Adam and Eve. So there is no genitalia exposed. There is a hint of a breast in a stylized form and a male buttock, which belongs to Adam. Anyway, the long and short of that story is it was basically severely punished and chastised by Facebook, Facebook, Elephant Journal was. And we don't know why it was so severe, but every administrator on the page, there's about 20 different content managers who were on there, were blocked on their personal accounts anywhere from 12 hours to 30 days, depending on prior infractions. And I was one of those who got the 30-day block. But even more so, Lori, and more daunting, is that Elephant Journal relies on a good 60% sometimes of its traffic from Facebook to its magazine online. And they were given a notice that one more infraction and Facebook will shut their page down. Now, you had to realize that this was their second infraction. The first infraction was a week before that when they did a plaster artwork of a wall of vulvas to illustrate an article, thinking it was okay because Facebook is on the record as saying graphic nudity that's actual photographic material is not okay. Sculpture and artworks are. So, you know, following that apparent rule, Elephant Journal thought it was doing fine, that there was no need to worry. In fact, probably a year ago there wouldn't have been, but Facebook is changing its kind of approach towards this. So you imagine, like, third strike, and third strike, and Facebook be candid. I need to say this. The policy spokesperson from Facebook, her name is Allison Schumer, took a look at the artwork after Waylon Lewis, the owner of Elephant Journal, put up a big article about what had happened and made it a media hoopla, and she responded to us at Elephant Journal with, "We are so sorry. This artwork should never have been removed. We are promptly restoring it to your page. Mea culpa. We made a mistake." Yet at the same time, none of the administrators who were blocked had their accounts restored. And at the same time, Facebook seems to still be under one more strike, and Elephant Journal's page is at risk of going down, even though the second violation wasn't actually a violation, nor was the first, to be technical. So this kind of environment where you could build a sexy business platform, and Elephant Journal's Buddhist, yogic, mindful, but some of the material, as you know, covers sexual content.
Sure.
And to think that you can have your huge, you know, platform for your readership or your audience shut down with no notice, with no appeals process, and with no real explanation is pretty daunting. So the end of the day, I say to people, like, don't put all of your eggs in a Facebook basket. They're pretty fragile in there. They're likely to draw off.
Wow. It's amazing. Well, I mean, are you still in an appeals process?
No, the appeal was denied and the page was completely deleted. But when I say the appeal, there was no appeal. There was simply that you clicked a button and it said, I don't agree with your unpublishing of my page. And you got a form letter back saying, well, look at your appeal. And then you got a form letter saying, we've just deleted your page. So the appeals process isn't really anything you're engaging in as much as just waiting for Facebook to make a decision up on what they're going to do.
Yeah, I see. So, okay, so it feels like that's like a done deal.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I think any time something like this happens, like for me, it's a really good opportunity to step back and look at what does this mean for me right now and why is this happening? And one of the things I kind of sensed about it is that, you know, sometimes there's this curve, like a trend curve, and I feel like I could be a little bit ahead of where the actual where things are going. Like in maybe 10 years, or maybe, let's not be pessimistic, 4 or 5 years, there'll be a social media site where this kind of content, healthy sexual exploration, discussion, and conversation is welcome. And it's not just kind of a pornographic direction, which is so common right now. I'm very disheartened sometimes when I look at some of the sites that are out there, that, like, at the fetish sites or, you know, the kink sites, because they're just so hardcore and they're just so pornographic as opposed to intelligent and exploratory and interesting and insightful. So I just don't know. I think I was attempting to do something ahead of its time, and I'm pretty well deciding to let that project lay dormant for a while until I regroup and decide, so is there a place for this besides to put up the website without being able to promote it on, say, a big enough forum as Facebook is not a good idea. It means...
Yeah, I see what you mean. Well, you know, one of my friends rerouted things by giving herself a new name mm-hmm. on Facebook, but one close enough to what her name was, and then she let people know that she was starting a new site, and it was for people who attend Hedonism, the resort that's known for anything goes, wild sexuality, swingers, anything, nudity. Mm-hmm. And she started her whole own site just for people who want to participate in Hedonism or who want to find out more about it and whatever. And so she keeps the thing she writes on Facebook kind of vanilla, and then she directs people over to this other site.
Yes, and that's certainly a great way to go about it. And I know that there's quite a few people who have gone that route already with sites that they were hoping that their Facebook page could be as prominent and they could use it as effectively as they wanted to and realized it wasn't going to work. One of the couples in the sexual community that I really like is a couple who does orgasmic healing, we'll just call that. And their site at Facebook, their page is called Explosive Sexual Healing. And
yeah, I've seen them.
Oh,
I actually invited them to be on the show.
Oh, I do hope so. So I've met them as well. And Ben and Jen Rode are really committed to the work they're doing. And he's a somatic sexual body worker, and she's a Reiki healer. And I mean, I know they're doing really good work and they're coming from their heart. But I mean, they're, for instance, an example of how just difficult it is to run that kind of content on Facebook, even if you're not explicit in your photographs. Is that they have been banned from advertising or promoting their page just because the name is Sexual Explosive Healing.
Right.
Forget about what you put on there. So it almost becomes you'll have to name your page something really tame, like Winnie the Pooh, you know, at Playground. You can't say sexual. You're already flagged. You can't use sex. Here's another example. My sister has a website, Still Sexy After MS. She has multiple sclerosis, and she's got a huge following in the MS community because she advocates, you know, not being a victim and looking at yourself as a whole person, even though you have an illness. And her page has basically also, because the word sexy in her Facebook page is on the name of the page, she's also been flagged. And you can tell when someone's been flagged because you can't advertise. They block your ads. You can also tell when you've been flagged because you have no advertising running along the side of your page. And the bigger picture of that is if you imagine Facebook is going to survive and be accountable to its shareholders on one of its strategies, advertising revenue, the pages in which advertising is not running on the side of the Facebook page, it eventually will become a liability to Facebook, taking up bandwidth but not making them any money. So I'm only imagining somehow in like 2 or 3 years, Facebook will have no choice but to also somehow phase those pages right out of their system.
It's amazing. I'm looking on my page right now to see if there's advertising next to it. Yes, there is. I guess I didn't do anything wrong at all.
What's the name of your page right now?
I have my page, Laurie Handlers, and then I also have my page, Butterfly Workshop.
Yeah, but you know, and that's wonderful because you built your brand and the name, your name, and Butterfly aren't being flagged by the algorithms like sex or sexy, you know.
Right. Yeah, because I never built a name around sex, but the name of my show is Sex and Happiness, which I advertise on Facebook all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And also I advertise classes like Sex Magic.
And I think that's probably fine. I mean, what I'm saying is they can only stop an ad from going out when it's actually connected to the page that from which it's emerging. So if your Butterfly page is the one putting out the advertising with the word sex in it, that's not going to be something they're going to probably be able to block or necessarily desire to block. So I guess a simple solution for page owners, especially the sex educational teachers that I know, like Candace Holdorf and her page is The Orgasmic Life. And she's already had trouble with that because the word orgasmic has gotten her flagged.
Right. I never used that. I just always used Butterfly Workshops. So it's interesting. So it could be a lot of different things. Well, we're going to take another break here. When we come back, I'm just going to ask you, like, what you are doing.
Okay.
All right, so if you just tuned in, you're listening to Sex and Happiness. We're talking about freedom of speech, especially when it comes to speaking about sex on social media platforms or having sexy images or what have you. There's a big issue here now, especially for people who have invested their life savings and all their creativity in the areas of sex. So when we come back, I'm going to be talking to Lori Ann about her current projects and how you can get in touch with her if you have concerns in this matter or if you want to add support to this matter. So we'll be right back.
Are you wondering what book to read to jumpstart your life, get the best from relationships, attain the deepest feelings of intimacy? Do you want the best sex along with great happiness? Get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy by Lori Handlers right now. You'll learn how to make love in the unknown, take the performance anxiety and reaching a goal out of sex. You'll learn subtle ways of communication and really important practices to empower you when dealing with an intimate partner. You'll let go of blame and struggle. Doesn't this sound great? Sex and Happiness puts the innocence back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. Take charge of your life, physically, emotionally, and spiritually with Sex and Happiness by Lori Handlers, only $19.99 paperback and $14.99 ebook. Order your copy today by going to butterflyworkshops.com. That's butterflyworkshops.com for your copy of Sex and Happiness.
For weeks now, you've been hearing me talk about the Erotic Coast Film Festival and my film Beyond Dinner winning the award for the best short film. And you've been hearing me talk to all these guests that I met while I was there. And you haven't heard that much about the dinner, although in the show I did with Dr. Ava and Nancy Sutton Pierce, we did talk about what was in my film. I want to let you know that the film is about a ritual dinner that I invented called the Gate dinner. Gate means beyond in Sanskrit. And it's a very sensual 8-course dinner that starts with the forbidden, starts with dessert and leads its way back around to other foods. But all the foods in the dinner are very, very sensual, very beautifully prepared, and the presentation is amazing. And in this dinner, aside from everybody projecting themselves through a meditation that I do to their highest self, having had boundary exercises prior, the men rotate around the table and they feed various goddesses, all the goddesses that are around the table. And even if you come there with a partner, the partner lets go, doesn't take things so personally, lets the partner rotate around and have a sensual experience with each person that's participating. In this case, it would be men having a sensual experience with different women and then working their way back to their original partner. If this piques your curiosity and interest, I want to let you know that these dinners are now available to you wherever you are in the United States. And what you need is 20 people who would like to participate, and you can get in touch with me at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. That's sexandhappiness@gmail.com if you'd like to host a dinner like this in your part of the world. I would love to come to your and offer one of these dinners to you and your friends, and I know my chef would love to come too. Also, Antonio Tiggs, who you've heard on the show as well, would love to come and paint your servers. So your servers are all gold or all silver or what have you. So we have a little entourage that would like to come and make this such a memorable event for you. Please get in touch with me if you'd like to hear more about it and talk about the details. That's sexandhappiness@gmail.com. We are back with Sex and Happiness, and I'm Lori Handlers, your host. I'm with Lori Ann Lothian. And Lori Ann, I mean, we've just spent half of the show talking about how things happen and what things people need to look out for if they haven't, if they don't already know, and how the censorship arm or robots of Facebook have put the kibosh on various people who had very educational and have very educational sexual content that people need to learn from. Not porn, not soft porn, none of that, just simply educating people as to what their bodies are about. What projects are you working on now? What are you still engulfed in? Are you still writing for the Huffington Post? What are you doing with these things?
Well, thanks for asking. You know, it's all that one door closes, another door opens. So in a way, I see that this has been a huge opportunity to open into a new business alliance. So first of all, of course, I'm still writing. I can never not be writing. So I'm writing for Huffington Post, and that's about menopause and libido and sex after 50. And that's a fun one to write about because I'm 51. And I really like telling people about what it's like to be going through this life transition. And I enjoy sharing that honestly and candidly with people. And that's something I'll never not do. I'll keep writing as long as I'm writing. And, you know, Huffington Post is a great vehicle for that. But where I actually am finding the most juice right now is in two areas. One is back to sex, because I wrote a book and I let it sit on the shelf for a year before completing it. Like in the last 2 months, I've been finishing the last four chapters. And now that I'm off Rebel Sex, I'm really hunkering down to either agent it or to self-publish it. And it's called How to Love, an Almost Fictional Handbook for Sex After Divorce. And I was divorced at age 42 or so, 43, and I went into a complete discovery of my sexual nature. It was as if I didn't even realize how much range I had as a sexual being until I left a marriage that was 17 years, 18 years in the running. And, you know, nothing wrong with my ex-husband, a lovely man and all that. It wasn't about him. It was about me. And I think I bloomed. I blossomed. One of my friends, Pamela Madsen, is very similar in her own life story, and she'd be great to interview. And she had a similar awakening in her 40s to her sexual nature and wrote a great book called Shameless. So my book is...
I've interviewed her.
She's a dynamo, working on a new book right now about BDSM, actually. So I think that for me, getting that book out there is important because it's really a huge learning that I had about, I'm not just heterosexual. Holy camoly, I'm not just bi-curious. I am actually bisexual. Or what would it be like to be polyamorous? Could I do that? I gave it a try. You know, having, you know, that willingness to explore all the range that I think I'm capable of, and finding out where my real boundaries are. Ultimately, I think I'm a monogamist, but I'm a monogamist with a lot of range. So that was good. I'm gonna get that book out. And the last thing I'm up to these days is I'm involved with a woman who's created a media group called BU Media Group, and it's just in the initial stages of launching right now. And I'm really excited about that because it's a forum that will provide a huge amount of creative range for me, but also for the possibility of allowing creative independence and artists a place to voice, have their voice and have their work met and shared, like a community for creative independence. And I believe that will also be a community that allows that sexual content to flourish. So I guess I'm saying I'm not going to play in Facebook's playground. I'm going to find my own. I'm going to make my own.
Yeah, I think that's what people have to do. They're going to have to make their own, and they're going to have to come up with something dynamite and wonderful and something better, more user-friendly and less restrictive.
And, you know, something, I have a teenage daughter, she's 14, none of her friends are on Facebook, they're all so disenchanted and bored with it. I hate to say this, not to be a death knell, you know, for Facebook, but, you know, I don't see the younger generations really going for it these days. They're moving to Snapchat and Instagram. And Facebook owns Instagram, but the actual platform doesn't seem to be catering to the younger generation. So it's very possible that Facebook has like AOL in its heyday, where everyone thought AOL, America Online, was going to take over the world, and it became very redundant.
Before Facebook, there was MySpace, which seems to be having a resurgence. And then there was also something called Zads, Z-A-A-D-Z.
Oh, I don't remember.
And I just got an email from somebody just a few days ago saying, long time no see you on Zads. We're re-upping or whatever. And so who knows? There might be a lot of a call for creativity now for people to do these other things, just like what you're saying.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point. I've heard MySpace is coming back a bit, and maybe because even you think about it, MySpace, it's your creative space. It's not Facebook owns you and is dictating what goes on there.
Yeah, yeah. So who knows? I think that I really trust the human spirit to find a way.
I do too, actually. I think that when something is broken, we always find a way to fix it. And Facebook may not fix their own internal brokenness, but outside of that range, there's creatives out there, people with, you know, great ideas. And I wouldn't be surprised if the next big thing is earth-shatteringly superior to Facebook, and also allows for that freedom of sexy speech. You know, it's okay to talk about sex beyond reproductive organs or pornography, something in the middle, in the healthy range of what we really all want to engage in, which is real
yeah
talk.
That's the piece. It's not only what we want to do, it's what we need. It's needed and necessary. I mean, this show is listened to by anywhere between 40 and 100,000 people every month. They download it, and so it's fulfilling something. It's fulfilling a purpose. I get emails that people say, you know, I got so much out of that last show. I learned so much. It changed my life. Whatever. People need this information. It's our birthright to be able to talk about this stuff openly, honestly, and without guilt, without feeling there's something wrong with us. We're not broken.
You know, that's the key piece. It's without shame. And unfortunately, I guess what happens when you get censored at Facebook, you feel like shamed, right? There's a feeling of like hand slapping. Yeah. Oops, you had a hint of nipple in your picture. You're shut down for 25 days, 30 days. It is shaming in a way. A little story about shame, and it just touches the heart of the matter, I think, about some of the puritanical, maybe patriarchal stances toward nudity. I'm not sure I want to pick on the guys, but one of the Facebook spokespeople wrote me an email to try to explain Facebook policy on nudity. And he said to me, we don't allow digital nudity. And I think what he meant was like computer-generated graphics that look real because, you know, this is a quote, because some of that nudity can be, quote, horrifically graphic. And we're not talking about violence. We're not talking about beheadings. We're not talking about violent porn. We're just talking about nudity. To actually imagine any kind of nudity can be horrific. But he meant that.
It's sad. It's a sad state of affairs.
It sure
it's
is.
Very sad.
It sure is, you know, because I could be actually horrified by the sight of a naked body. Oh, Lord.
Well, I really want to thank you. I want to thank you for, I guess, you know, it may not have even been your intention. I'm sure it wasn't. But I want to thank you for being in the front lines of this part of the sexual revolution. I mean, this is a whole other phase. I was part of the original sexual revolution. I call myself a general from the sexual revolution, going against the norms in the 60s and the 70s. And now I feel like this is a whole nother phase of it where the freedom of speech and the freedom of display and the freedom of education needs to be challenged against whatever is the righteous right.
The righteous right.
Yeah, or advertisers that use sex all the time in their car advertisements.
Like, sanctioned kind of sex to use, and it's very, very cliche and very, very. It's always the same thing, right? It's a cleavage and an ass, a tits and ass thing, but it's always the same. It's always the same kind of body. It's always the same level of display. You know, we see it all the time. It's the Bud Light version of sex.
Exactly, but it's the one that people feel that they have to conform to. Like if their body doesn't look like that, they don't deserve to be driving that Lexus.
I know. That's so funny, but it's sad. It's so sad. It's sad.
It's sad. Yeah. Well, I really want to thank you for being my guest today on Sex and Happiness. I feel that this is important stuff to get out there. I'm very interested in whatever projects that you do in the future and in participating in them. I'm a postmenopausal woman. And I'm still having the time of my life, and I love my body, and it's great. And I can talk about taking bioidentical hormones, and on and on and on, and how to keep my libido and other people's libidos up. So, please consider me, and I want to keep tabs on where you are and what you're doing.
Thank you, Lori. You're just so much fun to talk to. I really appreciate it.
Lori Ann Lothian, you are so welcome. Please tune in next time to Sex and Happiness when I'll be talking to a self-proclaimed cougar. This is Lori Handler signing off for Sex and Happiness.
Thank you for joining us today for Sex and Happiness. To learn more about Lori and her work, please go to butterflyworkshops.com or follow her on Twitter or Facebook. You can send her an email at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. And if you'd like to listen to podcasts of Lori's previous show, Tantra Cafe, please go to tantracafe.com. We'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Sex and Happiness. Want you to know.